Hi, I'm Steve Todd, and you're listening to Musicians FAQ, a radio program focused on learning more about the musicians that are entertaining you around Waterloo Region. We're featuring your favorite local singer, guitar player, or drummer, learning how they got started, influences, funny stories about past gigs, and upcoming performances. You'll also hear some great recordings of their work. In addition, we'll be learning about others in the music industry that are helping to maintain a vibrant music scene. This is Musicians FAQ. Hey, thanks a lot for listening in to Musicians FAQ. It's Steve Todd. Today we're meeting up with Grant Haywood for part two of his musical history. In part one, a few weeks ago, we learned about his early roots playing with his family, with the Earl Haywood Family Band, and his many years of being a part of the Barn Dance, which actually continues to this day. So let's join in now with Grant as he recalls venturing out on his own as a teenager to start on his own musical journey. Did you play in high school or anything like that? Or
yeah, the first band was just, we got to play a street dance in Wingham, and we didn't even have a bass player.
Oh, really? Okay.
We just had two guitar players. I played drums and a couple of us sang. And then we morphed into a better band. We got better musicians. And yep. I would say the band that made its mark the most in the area was a group called Mackenzie.
Okay.
And had my best friend Paul Swatridge at the time. Paul's dad, Hap Swatridge, was an accordion player that played in the Barn Dance band with my dad. We toured in the upper New York State.
Good for you.
Tour out east, we'd tour through Ontario. We did the terrible northern tours where you Kappus Gasing and Thunder Bay and God knows where.
Yeah. You must have some road stories about that too. Storm state and crazy weather.
The sad part about Paul being, like, Paul was a gifted musician. He could play sax, he played keyboards, and he played drums.
Yeah.
So he was kind of like me, and he was a great singer, a great guy. And at the age of 19, we were selling out a lot of places. One particular place was the Elmhaven in Clinton. It was it was known as a rock bar at the time. They were having everybody there from Copper Penny to Sea Dog, you name it.
Okay.
Pretty big name rock acts at the time. And we would play there, and we were the local favorites because, well, everybody knew who we were. And we were playing there just... can't remember if it was New Year's Eve or it was prior to New Year's Eve, but Paul took a heart attack. He's only 19.
Wow,
and died on stage just as soon as we finished our last number.
You're kidding. Oh, that must have been devastating.
It was devastating. I didn't play for the next 4 to 6 months. I just couldn't, you know.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, it was tough. Well, but I regrouped the band, Mackenzie. We got some new members. The guitar player stayed, Simon Farlow, who's an excellent guitar player at the time.
Okay.
And he's from Mount Forest, and then Barry Vane was from Mount Forest too, the bass player, but he opted out eventually. Tom Wyszkowski came into the band, and Dave Thomas and Simon Farlow was our guitar player, and Al Davies became our drummer, and I went out front and played guitar. So we did some demos at the Mercy Brothers Studios at the time, because I was really pushing to do original music. I was a songwriter, and that's the direction that I wanted to go in. So, and Tom Wyszkowski now runs the Masonic Hall over in Stratford, and has had good success with that. We played there actually with Cracker Jack Palace the last three New Year's.
Yeah, that's great. But yeah, that's a great venue, that place.
Tom's written or has put out a CD and is about to put out a second CD, and has written a book, and he's on his second book, and I have a chapter in both books.
Well, okay, that's neat.
Yeah,
good for you.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. So in Mackenzie, I was a songwriter at the time. I started writing songs when I was about 12, 13 years old, and like my dad was always a songwriter in that too, and I just wanted to make the band go further. I wanted to get into records and radio airplay and that, but it was tough in that era because you could make so much money being a traveling band if you were popular. Taking it to the next level to record, and that requires a little bit of capital and a lot of risk. But we did some demos at the Mercy Brothers recording studio.
Yeah.
And there's another person I've played with is Larry Mercy. He's a wonderful guy.
Oh, I bet.
It's the Larry Mercy Trio, and both the guys that play in the trio now are friends of mine and play in the Barn Dance Band when I play.
Good for you.
Yeah. Our manager for Mackenzie was also from Mount Forest, and he joined up with Dram Agency in Waterloo.
Yeah.
And Dram was the one that got us a lot of work, and through Dram I got to know all the guys in Copper Penny and Major Hoople Sporting House, the Yukon. Those were the three big name groups at the time. So we signed with Dram, and that's why we got a lot of work. I also went to college to take a journalism course, and it only lasted a year because I was getting so much work playing in a band.
Yeah, that's okay. That's nothing wrong with that.
No.
At this point, or right now, it's pretty hard to make a living as a musician, where maybe back then you could scratch out a pretty good living.
My dad always told me, he said, don't quit your day job, son. He says, playing music, he says, will never come amiss. He says, and you'll always be able to make money. But he said, in Canada, it's a lot tougher than being in the United States. And it might be, it's likely tough down there too, but they have more opportunity because they're more populated.
Plus, even in the festivals and stuff, like there could still be festivals in the cooler months where up here everything kind of dries up.
Yeah. So that the Mackenzie band lasted, I would say, about 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
It was a good band. We were quite popular. We did well. I was singing Led Zeppelin songs. Oh, I used to do a Led Zeppelin medley.
Okay.
And I couldn't do it 6 nights a week with a matinee, because by the end of the week, my voice would be raw. That's what kind of helped us kind of get notoriety in the area, because nobody was doing a Led Zeppelin medley at the time. And it's hard to be Robert Plant.
Well, yeah, I know you're a drummer, but back then, were you also predominantly drums?
I was drumming, but I also played guitar and sang sometimes out front. So I'd be back and forth.
Good for you.
Yeah.
So that's Mackenzie. So that was 6 years in your early 20s, I guess, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah. The band kept on going, and they, it was kind of like my band. I kind of started the whole thing, but I wish them well. They continued, and I went on to play with a group called Full House in Kitchener, which was just a part-time band, played around the area. But it was nice to kind of get my footing again and decide what I wanted to do. And they were all good players. Paul Stouffer was a keyboard player who was quite well known.
Oh, yeah.
Paul was in the band, and John Turcotte was the guitar player. Johnny ended up leaving. Johnny's gone now. He passed away about 5 or 6 years ago, I think. But anyways, it was a fun band. I enjoyed it. And then I moved on from there to, I think that's when I put my own band together. I wanted to do something big. I started a group called Wizard.
Okay, yeah.
And Dram backed me up, and our manager was David Lodge from Major Hoople Sporting House.
Okay.
And David had left Major Hoople Sporting House to pursue a songwriting publishing career in Toronto with Greg Hambleton at Axe Records. And so Dave and I got to be friends through his management. I put Wizard together. They sent us all over the place. I used to do crazy things on stage because I wanted to. I was like an entertainer, like my dad. Yeah. My dad was a magician, and he'd twirl ropes. He'd do all kinds of stuff like that. Yeah. So I ended up putting it into a rock show where I would put a sword through our guitar player's neck while he's doing a solo.
Oh,
or I'd drive spikes through my arm, and I. Crazy stuff like that. It was kind of like a Nyan and Alice Cooper show without Alice Cooper.
Yeah, I was going to just mention Alice Cooper because this would be early to mid 70s probably then, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's because you mentioned Led Zeppelin before, so everybody was pretty theatrical.
Yeah.
In that time period. Eh?
Yeah. The picture, they took a really good picture of the band. It was, I think the picture almost sold itself of the band, but. It was tough because I couldn't raise the capital to have the big PA and lights that we required. I wanted to do bigger venues, and we just kept on doing the Ontario Bar Circuit, which was fine. And you wonder how long that's going to go until you get to the next level. And I continued songwriting, and I was getting frustrated. We were in Thunder Bay and doing a show up there, and we were playing for a guy at the Continental Hotel at... Joe Scambellari was his name. I think that says everything. So he wanted to manage our band and was willing to put money behind us. Well, David Lodge had flown up to Thunder Bay that time, knew that there was there's some problems with our group and wanted to talk to us about it. But at the same time, at the Sleeping Giant, which is another venue in Thunder Bay, Rocky Howell was playing, and he was the lead singer of Major Hoopla's Boarding House. He was having band problems at the same time. So to make long story short, we basically, I trimmed our band to the guys that I needed, and Rocky did the same, and we combined to make one band, the Rocky Howell Band.
Okay.
Yeah, we did a lot of touring. We used to do all, gosh, we do everything from, well, he continued to do the Beach Boys and Four Seasons stuff because that's what Hoopla's was known for.
Okay.
But we would do things like Genesis and Yes, and even Frank Zappa. It was, I mean, almost unheard of.
Oh, really?
But yeah, it was a very progressive band with, with great vocals. It was a lot of fun.
Then you must have had a keyboard.
No, I had gotten a guy from Grand Valley, Jamie Canavet, who's actually a guitar player, but I hired him on as a keyboard player.
Okay, that's neat.
The other guys, Dave Wright played in the band. He's from London, and I haven't caught up with Dave in years, and just saw him recently at a gig I was doing with the Janis Joplin Show with Chucky Zare.
Okay.
The Rocky Howell Band was a good band. We did some recording at the Stampeders Recording Studio in Toronto and put out a single. And we used to do a lot of touring.
All right, you're going to hear a song by the Rocky Howell Band that Grant wrote. It's called Carry Me Away. It's a demo the band recorded at Rich Dawson's studio from the Stampeders in Toronto. Even though it was Grant's tune, he felt Rocky should sing lead on it.
we used to do some practicing in Toronto, and we were at the end of Leslie Street at the Westinghouse building, and it was abandoned at the time, and there'd be different bands there, like Rush would be practicing upstairs, and Teenage Head would be practicing next to us, and down the hall would be Max Webster and different people, and we'd all gather in the lounge and had coffees together and talk about band stuff, and David Clayton Thomas would walk in and say, "Hey guys, how's it going? You know, what's everybody doing?" And Toronto was like that. There was, it wasn't cliquish or anything, and just everybody who was a musician got to know everybody else. Yeah. So it was kind of a network sort of thing. We opened for different people too, and in some of the bands like the Rocky Howell Band, the Desert Dolphins, and Major Hooples, we opened for like even the Barn Dance Band. We opened for Sawyer Brown.
Oh,
in Mackenzie, we opened for Lighthouse. In Hooples, we opened for the Grassroots at Lulu's.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned even Roy Orbison at one point.
Yeah, that was at the Center in the Square and at Hamilton Place. And that was a highlight for me because...
Oh, I can imagine.
That was like opening for Elvis to me.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And I invited my mom and dad to the Center in the Square concert, and they were right out front, and my dad told me, that guy has one of the purest voices I've ever heard, and I've never heard my dad. He's not a real complimentary person, but he just couldn't believe the voice of Roy Orbison.
And the band, it must have had a stellar band. Like, it would have been just incredible to just soak up the music behind Roy.
Yeah, no, it was a good time. Somebody asked me the other day, did you get his autograph? I said, no. I said, you do these gigs. When you're a musician, you don't think about that all the time.
Yep.
You know, it wasn't like I was one of the fans and groupies or something like that.
Yeah.
It still wasn't enough for me. I just wanted to get my songs out there and get airplay, and it's tough to do.
Oh yeah.
So my wife and I moved to Toronto. She was going to teachers college at the time at U of T.
Yeah.
And she worked at McDonald's at night as a night manager. I worked as a full-time musician when really we didn't have too much money at that time.
No, it's great.
So I ended up joining a group called Stormcrow in Toronto. And that band was obviously more rock and progressive. We did all of Crime of the Century, the whole album.
Oh, wow, okay.
And we did...
Did the sax player then, too, and everything with...
Actually, we didn't have a sax player. It was imitated on the synth.
Okay.
But it was a very good band. Wendell Ferguson, who is a five-time guitar player award winner at the CCMAs, was our guitar player at the time. Yeah, it was a great band. We did everything from Aerosmith to Van Halen to whatever.
Okay.
So we were being groomed. Our manager was grooming us to go into the studio, and we did some of our songs. We were kind of following in the footsteps of all the other Toronto bands. There was Max Webster. Rush was on top. There was Max Webster. Then there was Coney Hatch, Wireless, bands like that, Gatto and that. So we were going to record at the same studio, and hopefully... Toronto Star put an article out and said we were going to be the next big thing at the Toronto.
Yeah.
It never materialized. I played all the Toronto haunts, like the Piccadilly Tube and the Gas Works and places like that.
Okay.
I think the most embarrassing moment was the day that we played at Ontario Place. And I don't mean Ontario Place, the main stage. They had another smaller stage in the park there. But it would hold about 800 people. And we were doing sound check, and at that time, across the road at the CNE, they would stage concerts. So we did our sound check with a Supertramp song. Well, lo and behold, when we finished doing the song, I asked our sound man, I said, "Did you tape that?" He said, "It sounds like an echo." He says, "No, it's coming from across the road." It was actually Supertramp, and they were doing the same song, which is theirs, at the CNE for a sound check. I can't help but wonder if we felt like a second-rate Supertramp.
Oh no! Well, I'm sure what you were doing. I wonder if they were trying to play along with you guys just for.
That could very well be.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
All right, you're going to hear a demo recorded at a studio near Midland called Fantasy. Grant wrote that song based on a British television show he saw about a child who was the only one alive in a city and could go and do whatever he pleased. Fantasy was one of a few originals by Stormcrow that was used in the hopes of getting a recording contract with a label in Toronto. As Grant mentioned previously, Stormcrow was following in the footsteps of other Toronto bands such as Wireless, Max Webster, and Triumph. They had a large following every time they played all the hot rock and roll clubs like the Gasworks, Piccadilly Tube, and the Queensberry Arms. Take a listen to Fantasy by Stormcrow.
All around me, and Charlene Beck from Kitchener, Ontario, and you're listening to 102.7 CKMS Radio Waterloo.ca.
So now we're probably around, I guess, mid to late 70s, I guess, right?
Yeah, so after I left Stormcrow, I'd been on the road for a while and wanted to, I wasn't making any money. I had to get a job, move back to the Kitchener-Waterloo area because my wife has finished her time at Teachers College and she wanted to get a job teaching. And at that time, it was very difficult. Most of the jobs were up north and it's hard to get a teaching job, like even trying to get into the Waterloo County School Board. Well, she was a French teacher and I don't think she missed working at McDonald's. That had to be tough going to U of T and working at nights at McDonald's. She had leadership qualities that... She would get people at being in Toronto. She would serve John Candy and Joe Flaherty when they were finished doing SCTV at night. And it wasn't an easy job being in downtown Toronto doing that.
Yeah.
And it wasn't easy for her, me being out in the road and trying to bring home money. And when you're out on the road, you don't bring home much money. So we moved back to KW. She got a teaching position.
Yeah.
I played in a band called Full Steam Ahead, which was made up of a bunch of friends of mine. They wanted to record too, but they just, you know, they were a local band. It was tough. We were all working guys at the time. It was great playing. It was great to play with friends again. It almost felt like being at home, and I was at home. It was good.
Yeah. So. Were you doing like the Coronet and all the local places around here?
We'd likely play the Pit if anything, because we weren't a high echelon kind of band.
Okay.
Or anything. But it was a fun band and. The lead singer, Dennis McLaughlin, was a wonderful singer. He had James Taylor-type qualities in his voice. We co-wrote a tune or two, and he was into recording, too. He wanted to go that route as well. But he was working at Home Hardware, and it's pretty hard to balance.
Life gets, I'm the
same family
way. Life gets in the way. You can't do the things you want to do.
That's right.
Here's
a song that Grant wrote and sang on his own with the band Full Steam Ahead. It's called I Want to Know. Totally different than the other stuff we've heard. It's got a great bluesy, swingy kind of feel, so enjoy.
I knew that loving you was so easy, I wouldn't try so hard. But if I find that you're trying to tease me, you wouldn't get that far. I wanna know, well, do you really need me? Are you gonna leave me? I wanna know. I've gotta know.
So I did that for quite a while, and then Dave Lodge got in touch with me from Major Hoopla's boarding house.
Okay, so it kind of comes full circle because he was right kind of near the beginning of your playing, right?
That's right. And the Coronet was seeing its last days at the time. It wasn't long before they were going to be gone. So Major Hoopla's had regrouped again with the original members, which is Gail Selkirk from Stratford and David Lodge on bass, Peter Patalino on guitar, Rocky Howell on guitar, and Rick Riddell on drums. Dave came to me and said, would you be interested in joining Major Hoopla's boarding house? He says, Rick Riddell has a business and it's just too much for him to keep going. And they had started doing reunion gigs and they did one at the Coronet. Well, people were lined up to see them and they were going to do another one. And Dave wanted to keep the band going and Rick just didn't have the time for it. So I got to join Major Hoopla, which was almost like a lifelong dream because of any of the dram bands that I appreciated all of them, but the thing about Major Hoopla's was they were good players and they were excellent singers. Nobody was doing the material they were doing.
Okay, yeah.
Partly because of Rocky's voice. I mean, he could sing the Four Seasons. In fact, when Frankie Valli left the Four Seasons and they were playing at Lulu's, I heard through the grapevine that they had possibly asked Rocky to join Valli in the Four Seasons.
Wow, okay.
Joining Hoopla's was great for me. We did a lot of corporate tours. We flew all over Canada for Avon Cosmetics.
Oh, you're kidding? Okay.
We even learned dance steps. We had a choreographer come in for 2 weeks and taught us all these dance steps to do. And it was,
you're kidding?
Yeah, they wanted us to do at first they wanted us to do a show that Donnie Marie Osmond did for some big corporation in Atlanta. So they sent us the videotape and said, this is what you have to do.
Yep.
And we had to dress up in a bowler hat and a sequin vest. And
okay.
It was real shtick. It was Las Vegas, basically.
Okay. That's all right, though. That's good.
Yeah, it was. It was. It paid really, really good money and got our foot in the door doing corporate functions.
Yep.
And from there, we ended up playing for the Toronto Blue Jays, Bell Canada.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We played for the Wayne Gretzky Tennis Tournament, got to meet Wayne, and Cheryl Teagues was there as well, the model, and different
good for you.
NHL people we got to meet through that. So,
is that still around in some form at all, or do those guys still...
Major Hoopla's?
Yep.
They were. Peter Patalino had regrouped the band in as recent as, I would say, within the last 5 years. But I played in Hoopla's. It was an opportunity for me. Peter went on to play with the Lulu's Roadhouse Band. I regrouped Major Hoopla's because Dave Lodge had contracted cancer.
Awesome.
And he had a year to live. We did our last Avon tour that particular year with Dave and the band. But there wasn't a whole lot of hope because it had spread to other organs in his body. And he left two young boys and a wife, and it was kind of sad. So I'm going through this again, and it was tough. I put a new Major Hoopla's together with Rocky as the lead singer and Gary Hintz, the bass player, who was in McKenzie when I left.
Okay.
And he's a good singer, too. And Ralph Hetke on keys, who is known, he played in a group that from the dram days as well, from the agency. Can't remember the name of them off the top of my head.
You've got a pretty good memory for all this stuff, though. There's tons and tons of musicians and locations. But
we were a four-piece band, and we did really well. We got a lot of write-ups in that. I should say that, too, before Dave passed on, he passed away in 86. It was 84, 85, we recorded a second Hoopla's album.
Okay.
Major Hoopla's had hits with I'm Running After You and Someone. It did very well for them on a national scale, and it got us some jobs with the KW Symphony Orchestra.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, they did a gig with the KW Symphony Orchestra, and then they went to do it again, and then with the London Symphony Orchestra, and I got to be a part of that.
So the band's out front, and then the strings and everything are beaten behind?
Okay. That's right, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of things like that are incredible.
Yeah.
Like they'll do a full Elton John album or whatever, and... it's pretty amazing to hear.
Yeah, as a musician, it's exciting, but yep. as a drummer, it can be terrifying yep. because you don't have rear view mirrors. You can't see what's going on with the conductor behind you, yep. and they follow the conductor. So if you should be off just a slight little bit in your timing,
yep.
you better get back on track. Okay, it's yeah. not. If you saw him, it would be easier to play, but I didn't, and, yeah. and we just kind of did okay. our routine.
And those are probably the days where you're not using a click track or anything like that, right? You're just...
No, yeah. no, it's just live. So we played the Center in the Square with Roy Orbison, too. We opened for Roy okay. at the Center in the Square. We also opened for him at Hamilton Place, and there might have been a couple of other times.
Oh, that would be amazing.
And we played with the Grassroots out at Lulu's. Dave got to be good friends with... the guy in the Grassroots, and they became co-writers and okay. songwriting.
Yeah,
but yeah, it was an exciting time for me. It was the level I wanted to be at, and we actually recorded a second album between Dave Lodge and myself and Jack Calendarian. I ended up writing almost half the songs on the album.
Wow. Okay.
And Dave and I co-wrote a song called "Late Night Invitation," which did well in the adult contemporary charts. It was.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe when I got my first check. It was like winning $1 million, but it wasn't $1 million. No, no, no. But it was yep. great to be recognized.
Okay,
and
that's great.
So we did the whole video thing. You know, we were down at Much Music and got airplay.
Great.
Back in those days, I looked a lot different.
Yeah,
wearing spandex tights on stage, oh, okay. and yeah, well, it's what musicians yeah, do to, sure. to entertain. That it was yep. Kind of odd, but there it was.
Okay, we're going to hear two songs from Major Hoople's Boarding House right now. The first one was before Grant joined the band. It's a song called I'm Running After You, 1975. It was a top 30 Canadian hit. And the second one was written by Grant after he joined the band. 1985 album, The New Adventures of Hoople's. And the song's called Late Night Invitation.
I'm running after you, I can't forget the things you do. Since we
hoping that you feel the same. Looking for that just right combination to open up our love again. Looking for a lady.
After Dave Lodge had passed away, I worked in a band for a year with, that was hard to take too. Every time that something tragic happens, it's really hard to get your footing again.
Yep.
It's a good time to write songs, but a bad time to be in a band. And
it's almost like a marriage in a lot of ways, or part of your, it's another form of a family, right? And having somebody pass away is pretty tough.
Yeah. So this band was with Keith Kistner, who runs Straight Street Sound and Lighting in Kitchener, Waterloo, and he plays electric violin. Bill Kaluk was on bass guitar, and Bill Gottfried played drums, and I played guitar in the band and added electronic percussion, and I was the lead singer.
Okay.
And the band started out as a group called Taxi, but we were really progressive. It was almost like, I don't know, it was like UZEB meets Yes or something.
Oh,
I don't know how to explain it.
And this was after, you said after Major Hoople's?
Yes, it was.
I'm trying to think, was it in the mid-90s that the second album came out? Or
the second album came out 85 or 86.
I'm off by a decade.
Dave passed away in 86, and this would be about 87.
Okay.
And then I was in this band for a year, and we recorded a bunch of demos. We had about a dozen songs, original songs. Wow. I put Major Hoople's back together again after that with Rocky Howell and Gary Hintz, who was in the McKenzie band when I left.
Okay.
And Ralph Hetke, who had played in a dram band called Trolley. He played keyboards. So it was a four-piece Hoople's. And we continued to do some of the corporate gigs and played the circuit and that. And it was a great band. Rocky was in his prime. And I think Rocky really enjoyed it because there was no politics involved. And, and a lot that can happen a lot in bands. And we all enjoyed it very much.
Oh, yeah.
We were all good singers. We had all the vocals there. And
corporate gigs are always the best compared to the bars and things like that. You get treated a little bit better sometimes, I guess, if that's the right way to put it.
Well, yeah, and the pocketbook, too.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
All right, here's one of the songs that Grant recorded with the band Taxi. This is called Lady Geisha, and you can really pick out Keith Kistner's electric violin and also Grant's distinctive vocals.
Yeah.
All right, we're back. Thanks for listening to Musicians FAQ. I'm Steve Todd, and let's continue our interview.
Do you have a little studio in your place right now, or because it sounds like you're quite the songwriter? So,
well, I have off and on. Believe it or not, I just have a little Tascam handheld four track that I use, and I even use my phone if I have an idea, whatever. I'll just put it on there and redo it when I get home. I don't have a studio at home. I did have when I had a reel-to-reel and we were into analog. As soon as it went digital, I didn't seem to have the time for it. I realized I'm actually considering getting back into the digital format because I play in a band called Cracker Jack Palace now, and our keyboard player is a doctor, Dr. Mark Diatalevi.
Okay.
And Mark has a computer program at home, and I'm working with him now. Yeah. You know, a day or two a week.
That's great. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's actually quite cheap now compared to years ago. I think a lot of the software is actually freeware that you can get.
Yeah.
And so as long as you have some good mics and stuff, you could probably get into that without too much cost.
Yeah, as far as equipment goes, I've got lots of that.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah.
But I used to record at home quite a bit. I guess what happened is I got a day job and that. I just didn't have the time for entertaining and playing live and singing backups for people and writing songs and that. Recording you have to put another hat on to record in that.
Yeah.
And I've been involved in the studio. I've likely done 5 or 6 albums or CDs for people where I've been the producer.
Oh, really? Wow.
But that's another thing. Putting on a producer's hat and being a musician are two different things.
Oh, somebody told me that you should get somebody to record it. Like you go to a studio, but then you want somebody else to mix it down. You want a second set of ears.
That's correct. And even mastering in that too.
Yeah.
Same thing. Yeah. And a lot of musicians don't get it. They think it's not like they don't have the capability, but it's better to have a third person do that than doing it yourself, because you're right, you need fresh ears for it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
All right, we're going to hear one more song from the album The New Adventures of Hooples, which was released in 1986. Grant wrote and sung the song. It's called Hold On. When I'm alone, I need you more than ever. All right, stay tuned for part 3 and part 4 of Grant Haywood's musical story. There's so much to cover. We're going to be talking about Grant playing with the Desert Dolphins, Cracker Jack Palace, playing in Maryhill with Paul Weber, being a part of the barn dance back in at Fiddler, such as Al Cherney and Don Reed, just being a studio drummer, playing with several different blues projects, a Janis Joplin tribute and a Woodstock tribute. There's so much material to cover. So stay tuned. Looking forward to these 2 episodes. So thanks a lot for listening to Musicians FAQ. It's Steve Todd.